the license, your pilot's license that you have. So he's flying.
The Tuesday, April 15th meeting of the Planning Commission to order. Let's have the Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioner Slane, would you lead us, please?
Please rise and join me.
Thank you, Commissioner Slane. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Present.
Commissioner Jack?
Here.
Commissioner Marks?
Here.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Here.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Here.
Chairperson Fonzie?
Here.
All present.
Thank you, Annette. We come to the approval of agenda. Would someone like to make a motion?
I move we approve the agenda.
Second.
Been moved by Commissioner O'Keefe and seconded by Commissioner Jack. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yes.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
7-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Our next item is Planning Commission business. Is there any item that a commissioner would like to discuss? Seeing none, I'll close that section and move on to disclosure of ex parte communications. Let's start with Commissioner Hetherington and go on down.
Nothing to report.
I visited site on item number 3 that was on Tunitas, and that is it.
Nothing to report.
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 Thank you. Let's move on to the public comment portion. This period in the meeting is set aside for anyone who would like to address the commission on an item that is not on tonight's agenda. If there's someone who would like to speak to the commission, please approach the podium and give your name and address for the record. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public comment portion and bring it back to the commission. Consent calendar. Would anybody like to pull an item from the consent calendar?
Yes, I would like to pull number 3 so we can get an update, progress report on it. And on item 1, I would like to add a sentence from my comments at that meeting to the record of the minutes.
All right. Anybody else have any items? All right. Let's go ahead and take your comments for item 1, Commissioner O'Grady.
Okay. This could be added to my existing comments in the meeting notes, that I expressed my concern about the maintenance of the existing driveways along El Camino that do not meet current separation standards and pose a significant safety hazard to the public.
Thank you. Could I have a motion to approve items 1 and 2 of the consent calendar, please?
So moved.
Second.
I believe that was Commissioner Marks and second by Commissioner Hetherington. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yes.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
And Commissioner O'Grady, you had questions about item number 3, which was 5516 Tunitas. Would you like staff to address those questions?
Yes, I'd just like an update. Why is the project being continued, and what's the forecast for it?
The project has actually gone through foreclosure recently, and that's one of the reasons why it's been stalled for a while. I believe that the project applicant is here in the audience if you have any questions.
Sure, I'd love to hear from the project applicant just to give us an update on the status of the project.
I'd have a point of order. I'd like to know from Mr. Frace whether this would be a public hearing at this point in time, or we're just opening this up for discussion.
Well, it's not a public hearing in that it requires the public notice and that sort of thing, but any of your items are open for public discussion, so it is appropriate at this point to invite anybody from the public that wishes to speak on the item to the podium.
Thank you. Would the applicant care to speak on this subject? If so, please approach the podium and give your name and address for the record.
My name is Brian Cowan, and my address is 524 Princeton in San Luis Obispo. How far back are you looking for information?
Well, I'm mainly interested in the current status of the project and what you think is going to happen going forward.
Okay. The property is presently about 2 months out from a trustee sale, in which the group of investors that lent money to the present title owner hope to gain ownership, at which point they hope to resubmit for final map and at some point proceed with construction.
It's a multifamily project still, is it?
Correct. It's three new single-family units and the remodel of one existing.
Oh, it's single-family.
Correct. The lot, the proposed map would subdivide the lot into four.
And you expect that will happen after the trustee sale is closed, and you don't anticipate being back here a year from now?
They would hope not.
Okay.
They've already begun to establish a relationship with Pam Giardini, who would be submitting, making the submittal for that, for recordation.
Thank you very much for the update.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Excuse me, I have some questions.
This is for the applicant?
To the applicant.
Okay, go ahead.
I've driven by that project a number of times. My first question is, how long have you been involved with this?
Okay. We became involved in the fall of last year.
And have you done? Has anything been done since you've been involved? Because I haven't seen anything done. The colony house that's there has been boarded up for some time, and nothing has been done.
No work has taken place, to my knowledge, or to the applicant's knowledge. The one thing we have done is taken measures to be sure that the construction fence remains around the property.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions for the applicant? Thank you, sir. Let's bring it back to the commission for discussion and perhaps a motion. Commissioner O'Keefe?
I actually voted for this project when it, when it was first heard, but I regret my vote for the project. There were considerable constraints on the property there because it fronts on two streets, and especially with regard to the frontage on Rosario, it just is not an attractive development, planned development, from my perspective. I didn't realize what the impacts were going to be based on the information. Also, at that time, because we were dealing with the new zoning and things like that, it was, well, it meets the zoning. But in my opinion, the constraints with regard to the terrain were not taken into consideration. not much work has been done on that project, and I actually had received some complaints. It has nothing to do with the new applicant, but with way things were proceeding on there, tree protection, things like that. I really would like to see some changes on this and a better project come back. And I don't like saying this, but it is not an attractive project, in my opinion.
Any other comments?
I'll make a comment.
Commissioner Slane?
I think I was involved in this when we approved it last year, 2007. And it's unfortunate for Commissioner O'Keefe that she's changed her opinion at this time. But I think the law allows the applicant to request that extension. We've already passed it. We ought to let it go on through. If they don't follow through at the end of that 5 years, then let's make our changes. But until then, let's go with the way it's set up.
Point of clarification. The project was not approved last year. The project was approved, I believe, in, was it 2003?
Yes.
So that's when the actual plan development was approved. They've come back for extensions. But when we heard it last time, it was just simply for an extension.
I stand corrected on that. I'm still supportive of an extension.
Sure, but I just wanted to clarify
okay,
that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jack?
I've got some familiarity since I'm currently involved in a similar situation on a piece of property where it's going through bankruptcy and foreclosure and that. These are tough times in some of the real estate areas, and I know that the project that I'm involved with, we're going to have to go back and get and ask for extensions once we get through the foreclosure process and that. And it takes about roughly 9 months before once you actually do your file of notice and then end up clearing the title through the foreclosure process. So I do not have a problem with asking for a time extension due to the circumstances. And if we've got concerns with the project, I'm sure we'll get another opportunity down the road. So I would support Commissioner Slane.
Commissioner O'Grady?
I have no familiarity with this project at all, other than what was the brief description here in the staff report. But it has been 4.5 years since the project was approved. So there have been extensions granted. I don't, because of my lack of knowledge about the project, and because I respect Commissioner O'Keefe's concerns about the project, I don't feel that I can vote for the extension at this time. But I do have a question of the about the consequences of not approving the extension, and I wondered if city staff could outline those for me.
This is a multifamily lot. They can still build the houses as they have designed. They just wouldn't be all on separate parcels the way the plan development has approved. So not approving the time extension would not limit the development the way that it's designed. They would have to change their setbacks to meet standard setbacks if those are different because of the plan development. But the number of units would not change.
So... Excuse me. So does what you just said mean that the project would not come before the commission again for any sort of reconsideration or conditioning?
It could come back for a reconsideration as a new project, basically. If you expire the time extension, it basically kills this project. They'd have to come back for new entitlements to do a plan development, either the way that this one's designed or it changes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Callie, I know that this is acceptable by law. Are we required by law to go for an extension? I mean, if they're allowable, does that mean we have to do them?
No, the commission is not required by law. There are certain findings that you can make to deny the project, and those are in the resolution.
Okay. Now, the planned unit development, they could come back at a separate time if we didn't okay the extension. They could come back with the PUD later as well.
Yes, they could still come forward with that, but it would be a whole new review of the project.
I have a question for staff regarding the project, because I haven't thought about this project or gone through it as we did when we had the public hearing. I can't recall if there was an affordable housing unit that was a part of that project.
No, this is only conditioned for in lieu fees.
Okay.
Just one comment more from staff on this. This is kind of a complicated project. When we do these planned developments, you get these layers of entitlement. So there's the PD, and then stacked on top of the planned development is your CUP, which is your master plan development, and then stacked on top of that is the map. So they're all designed to go together. And you also have a project that is half what's under construction. Obviously, it stopped, but the whole site was graded. Foundations were poured. There's, you know, some utility work and things like that. If one of the pieces of that, you know, goes away, like the map, we don't really know how it affects all the other pieces. It does compromise the integrity of the whole project. There are certain features of the PD that could be affected. We don't know exactly what that is. So it's somewhat a house of cards. If you pull a piece out of it, we don't know exactly, and the applicant probably doesn't know exactly how that all unravels. So I just want you to be aware that, you know, there's kind of a unknown consequence of it, taking a piece out of this. I think, you know, from staff's perspective, whether we like the project or not, it seems like right now it's a nuisance. You know, if you go to the neighborhood, it's clearly a blight and a nuisance. I think, you know, from the city and staff's perspective, is getting a project built there that would cure that nuisance is an important factor to consider as well.
Thank you. Commissioner Slane?
Well, it seems that if it's a nuisance there and we've had complaints by the neighborhood or some complaints, as Commissioner O'Keefe has mentioned, I'm not sure if there's anybody in the public that's complaining about it, or we're not aware of it. And I also take in consideration the developer, the costs and the expenses that he's put in this to bring this forth to, whether you want to call it infill or bring in housing, low-cost housing, whatever type of housing for us in this community, that's what they're trying to do, and I think we need to work with them.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes, I visited the site, and Mr. Frace is right. There has been a substantial amount of work done out there. Foundations are poured, and they are. At least one of them is quite a large foundation. And there has been some work on the existing home that's there. There are new windows in it. And I don't know if that work is recent or not, but it obviously has been worked on.
I would like to state that I have been through the older home that is on the project, and they have tried to maintain a colony home, which I think is in their, you know, on the good side of the project, to their benefit. I think that this is going to compromise the integrity of the project, and if it goes into foreclosure, as the applicant stated, what we may see is a vacant lot for a very long time, because it will have lost its value, because the PD will no longer be present, and they have to start from scratch with different grading that may cause some problems because they've already started it. Do we have a motion on this item?
I move that we approve the time extension.
Second that.
Moved by Commissioner Jack and seconded by Commissioner Slane. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
No.
Commissioner Hetherington?
No.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Abstain.
Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
I'm not sure what to do with an abstained vote, if that means the motion passes or not.
I think we had four affirmative votes, so it passes regardless of how you interpret the abstention.
Okay. The motion passes 4-3.
Thank you, Annette.
Let's read it 4-2-1.
4-2-1.
All right, let's move on to the public hearing portion. We have, as item number one, this would be our Rite Aid development project on El Camino Real. Staff report, please.
Yes, good evening, commissioners. This next item that's before you was continued from the March 18th meeting and is back before you with some additional information as requested. So just a little bit of background on the project. It is located at 7045 and 7055 El Camino Real. It's located within the Vaughn's Rite Aid Shopping Center at the intersection of El Camino Real and Highway 41. The zoning designation is commercial retail. This is the proposed project site. It does include remodeling of the existing building and a proposed new Rite Aid building in this location here. As we saw before, this was the site plan for the proposed building. With the existing driveway to remain on El Camino with a restricted right-in, right-out access pattern. The existing driveway to remain off of Highway 41 as well. This blue line here shows the limits of the new Caltrans improvements, which will widen the street in front of the proposed Rite Aid location. As we discussed previously, this site is a gateway feature to the downtown area, being at the intersection of Highway 41 and El Camino Real. And as discussed before, the applicant has provided some additional landscape features and conditions that we can incorporate a gateway feature at the corner to the site. At the March meeting, the Planning Commission did request some additional information in their motion regarding the building and appearance, particularly incorporating some tiled roof elements to go with the theme of the Carl's Jr. and Lubango buildings, which were recently approved for the general site area, and also to go with the remodel of the existing building in the back of the site. In addition, the commission did ask for some additional information regarding the signage proposal for Rite Aid, and those two elements are addressed in your most recent staff report that was issued. So again, this is the proposed remodel of the rear building for the Rite Aid site, including the gable tiled roof elements. This up here on the top of the screen was the previous proposal for the new Rite Aid building. As you can see, it had flat roofs and decorative stone veneer elements. This building down here is the redesigned Rite Aid structure. They did incorporate gable tiled roof elements along most of the elevations of the site. This side of the building would be facing Highway 41 and the Colony Square development. And they included some tile roof features at the entrance of the building in this location here. You can also see that they have superimposed the requested signage on the building elevations to give you a sense of what they are requesting at this time. In terms of signage, there's a combinations of different types of signage requested on the site. There are some wall signs, the majority of which are on the front of the building, which include two Rite Aid signs facing both Highway 41 and El Camino Real, a pharmacy sign on the over the entry portion of the building with some additional signage along this band here. In addition, there is some directional signage to help people locate the drive-through pharmacy area on the site. So there would be some wall signage placed in this location here, directing traffic to the drive-through portion of the site, as well as some freestanding directional signs and some vehicular notification signs for exiting and entrancing and which way they're allowed to exit from the drive-through facility. This signage, as proposed, is an increase in signage over what the current code allows for a single building on a single site. However, staff is recommending the approval of the signage with the condition that the freestanding signs be powder-coated in an earth-toned color consistent with the building. There are also two monument signs which were proposed for the site. The applicant did get rid of the changeable copy that was originally part of the base of the monument sign and has included the stacked stone veneer that's also a part of the building design. This monument sign here would be located along the El Camino Real frontage for the proposed Rite Aid building. The applicant did relocate the sign a little bit away from the corner intersection area. Originally, it was proposed in this location here. The applicant has located it over here to remain farther away from the gateway corner of the site. They are also requesting an additional monument sign for the anchor tenant for the rear building, so it would not be for the Rite Aid use, and that sign would be located in this location off of the Highway 41 near the entrance there. The signage is approximately, this sign here is approximately 100 feet from the city entry sign that's proposed in front of the Lubango development, and it's approximately 200 feet from the El Camino 41 intersection. Just for comparison, this is the city entry monument sign, and this is the approximately scaled proposed monument sign for the development. As was noted in your previous staff report, there were some CEQA comments. Staff remains with its current recommendations from the original staff report for the added mitigation measures, with one note that 15D3 mitigation measure noted a right-out-only movement from the drive-through, and that should read left-out-only. The project is consistent with the general plan policies that were noted in both of your staff reports that you received. And as always, there are five findings to make for approval of a conditional use permit. So staff is recommending that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution PC 2008-18 for approval of the project and certification of the NEGDEC. Accessible path without an accessible path provided. So we cannot provide stairs in any location where we cannot provide an accessible path.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Hetherington?
The sign that comes around the front where it says 1 hour photo drive-through food mart, is that like a stencil on an awning? Is that regulated? Can they change that?
It's not changeable text. It would be permanent text as is shown on the proposal. The applicant is available if you would like to ask him about the particulars of the material that it's constructed out of.
Okay. And could you tell me how high the letters are? I'm looking at 1'5 3/8". Is that correct?
The letters for which sign?
For the 1 hour photo drive-through food mart.
I'm trying to get you the sign packet, and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Commissioner Marks?
First, I'd like to say thanks to staff. I sent a fair number of questions in, emailed them in rather late in this process, and great job of answering them. Thank you. It was a good report. Title 24 requirements are, as I understand, a minimum. Am I correct in assuming that the additional 20% that the applicant must meet, must improve on Title 22 requirements, is a mitigation measure for the drive-through?
That was a recommended mitigation measure from the Air Pollution Control District. So that additional 20% exceeding Title 24 requirements was as mitigation for air quality impacts.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner O'Grady?
You'll recall at the March meeting I expressed my concern about the hazards posed by the lineup of driveways along El Camino, which have not changed in any significant way, including this particular driveway, which I thought should be closed for safety reasons. Subsequent to that meeting, I looked at the pathway proposed by the 18 wheelers that will deliver merchandise to the store and exit out onto the arterial street El Camino, and I tried to figure out how that truck would get back onto Highway 101. And I wondered if you could take us through with the site plan on the screen how semi-trailer will enter the site and how it will leave the site and what options it has.
Absolutely, and before we get there, I just wanted to make sure I answered Pam's question there. The 1 hour photo signs are approximately 11 inches at their tallest. So we did ask the applicant for a truck route diagram, so this sort of shows where the wheel hits and how the truck turns and moves through the project site. So the red line kind of shows the front wheel path that the front wheels would take on a truck of the particular size that would deliver at this location. And then this sort of orange-yellow line would show sort of the path of the rear wheels. So this is sort of the maximum extent, the entire path that would be needed to traverse through the site. So as you...
One, both northbound and southbound.
The truck could swing into this turn lane if traffic was favorable and turn onto Highway 41 to get back on a southbound exit, or they can continue on to the San Anselmo entrance to get on northbound.
To San Anselmo, so that means they would go through downtown and pass traffic way and get on northbound at...
Correct.
At what's that street? Okay, I understand where it is. Thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner O'Keefe?
Just a short one. What is the powder coating on the signs?
We're just asking them to change the color from a blue to something more earth tone to match the building.
Oh, so it's not a particular coating or anything? It's a color change?
It's basically a color change, correct.
Oh, thank you.
I'd like to ask Engineer Kahn just one point of clarification. When we talked earlier in the day, we discussed the pedestrian route into the shopping center. I wondered if you had come up with any solutions to the pedestrians coming in.
I have not. I took a look at it after our meeting today to see if there's some spot where we could provide a pedestrian route at the what would be the northeast corner of the site. We could put stairways in there, required the applicant to put stairways in there, but there'd be nowhere to put an ADA accessible route that I could calculate that would get them up there in the accessible slopes. I would like to defer to the applicant to see if they have any further ideas. They have more detailed design documents. From the design documents I saw, I couldn't find anything.
Thank you. And when we talked this afternoon, I had some questions regarding pedestrians coming into this. They have to cross across the driveway on El Camino Real and then take another path through, which isn't a real direct route, and most pedestrians will not take it, even if it's striped. The grade is such that you can't really do the ADA ramp without many twists and turns and landings and so forth. I wanted to clarify for sure that the pork chop will have a place for a wheelchair to roll across because it's shown on our drawings as being elevated.
Yeah, that's correct. There'll be a pedestrian corridor down El Camino Real across the project driveway and through the pork chop and then across the other driveway ramp that will meet ADA requirements.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, I'd like to call the applicant to the podium. And before you start, sir, I'd like to let you know that I and I'm sure others on the commission are very happy that you have brought a proposal back to us with some changes. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And just for the record, I'm Tom Jess with Aris Studio Architects in San Luis Obispo. I think the report that Kelly's done and working back and forth with her has been exceptional. I don't really need to reiterate all the points that she's made, so... maybe what I can do is just kind of sum it up from our point of view, how the process has gone and how we've gotten to this point and where we are, basically. I think prior to the last meeting, we worked with staff, both Public Works and planning staff, and made some significant issues and so forth. And I think that Rite Aid has stepped up and accepted their responsibility as a good tenant and a good neighbor and made those concessions. And I think that's kind of where we are right now. We're very pleased with the project we have. Rite Aid's accepted it and brought on board. So, you know, just to kind of briefly talk about a few of the changes that we made, I don't want to, like I said, go through everything. The major changes are architectural to the building, which were the major concerns the last hearing, which was the addition of the sloped roofs, the tile roofs, to tie in with the adjacent buildings that are going in, the Lube & Go and the Carl's Jr. and other buildings along El Camino. I think that worked out very well on the building. I think the building has benefited from those changes, and I think that, you know, you can see that on the elevations there. I think it's a good example of that. The other question that was raised involved the signage on the building, both building-mounted signs and the monument signs. We've taken several steps to help improve that, to clarify some of the issues that maybe were a little bit vague in the last one. We've added the signs onto the building elevation so we can see them, as opposed to just being in the sign package. Now they're on the elevations. We removed a sign off the rear of the building that was facing the existing building that's going to be remodeled. We removed that sign. We limited Rite Aid to one monument sign. Previously, we were proposing two monument signs for Rite Aid. We limited it to one. We've taken that monument sign, moved it further away from the intersection so that it has less of an impact on the gateway corner there. We've removed the movable text that was on the bottom of the sign. We've changed the color of the signs to be compatible with the building and the project overall. We've added the stone veneer to them as well so that they tie in. I think overall it's a very cohesive project. The retaining wall, the landscape feature, the trash enclosure, the monument signs all have the look and feel and character of the building, and that's being translated out to those other elements. And then I know that the one issue that I don't think made it onto the motion for continuance but has been brought up at the last meeting and then was brought up again today was the driveway along El Camino Real. There's a few points I want to make on that. The first point is that that driveway is absolutely vital to the project. And closing that driveway prohibits the trucks from exiting the site. I mean, I think you can see on the tire route that we have illustrated there that it's physically impossible for the truck to turn around the site and head back out Highway 41. That being said, the driveway is essential, and we've taken several steps to try and alleviate some of the potential conflicts that may have been generated by that location. The first one is we've worked with Public Works back and forth a number of times with the traffic study, and they've all said that the way to mitigate it, the best way to mitigate it is to do a right-in, right-out only, to eliminate that left-hand movement, which is the one that causes the greatest conflict based on its location. We've done that. We've added the pork chop in the center of it to encourage, to force that action, essentially. And then the traffic study did address this interchange and found it to be acceptable. Public Works has reviewed it and found it to be acceptable, and it's absolutely essential to the project that driveway remain in that location. If it wasn't, we would look at moving it. We're malleable in this, but we still need the building that functions. The pedestrian access, once again, we've run it not required, but we think that will help pedestrian access onto the site, and we feel comfortable that the proposal that we have is the best that we can do for getting pedestrians onto the site and still meeting the accessibility laws. The one thing that I would ask tonight is that hopefully you guys all see it the same way I do, that this is an example of how things have worked well. But the one thing I do ask is that we have a final vote tonight, one way or the other, because there really is nothing that we can do significantly to change this building or this project any further beyond this. And, continuing it would just be asking us to go back to do something that we just can't do. I apologize for that, but that's just the fact.
Thank you, Mr. Jess. I appreciate that. Any questions for the applicant? Commissioner O'Keefe.
I think we asked you this before, and I think you didn't have an answer, but I'm going to try again. And that has to do with the deliveries. I understand the constraints on the property, and there's only just so much that you can do, and I recognize that you have to have that outlet there. But how often will there be deliveries? Because if if you're not having a delivery every day, and if they can be timed, that eliminates a lot of the problem.
I think you are correct that you asked the question and I didn't have an answer. I still don't have an exact answer. The Rite Aid representative came in and we met with Kelly and walked the site and met with Kelly, and he was actually going to be here tonight. He was driving up for meetings down in L.A., got stuck in traffic in Santa Barbara, and wasn't going to make the time frame, so he turned around and he just sent us a text message. I mean, he really did make every effort to get here. I'm not sure. I think that the majority of deliveries happen in the evening just by the nature of, retail, but I can't say for certain that there's not going to be any daytime deliveries on the site.
Okay, but are you talking about two or three deliveries a day?
I don't know.
You don't have any idea on that. Okay. I think as a courtesy to the truck driver, I watch some of them get in some really tight spots. Just as a courtesy to them, give them a one-up. So they're not creating a traffic problem there and having to try to back up when there's problems and so forth. Other than that, I like the changes that you made. I like the changes that you made with the signage, and I'm ready to support the project.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner Hetherington?
Can you text message the fellow from Rite Aid and ask him that question while we're talking tonight? You have... Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner Jack?
The only question that I had was on the Rite Aid monument sign, the height of it, and its relationship to the Atascadero City entrance sign. And my only concern on that is that you and staff would work together to make sure that that comes out as a cohesive flow appearance-wise, because if it gets too big, then it becomes the entrance sign as opposed to the city sign, which we
have the trucks delivered at a certain time.
Is that something that we could do, Warren? That we could condition deliveries to be between 11 and 6 a.m.?
Staff has discussed this. We talked to the city engineer about this. I think what you'd want to do, there's certain times during the day that are okay. It's your peak hours that are the problem. The peaks kind of vary. So I think if you were going to make that sort of condition, which you could, you'd probably want to word in such a way that you want to restrict at least large truck deliveries outside of peak traffic hours, and then leave that up maybe to the city engineer to determine when those peak hours are. So if we have a problem with large trucks leaving the site at like 4:30 in the afternoon, we'll have a remedy to deal with Rite Aid with that.
Commissioner Slane?
I'm withdrawing my question. Warren answered it.
Any other questions for Mr. Jess?
I just wanted to make a comment with regard to timing deliveries. The truck drivers have other deliveries also. You're looking at the price of gas, this kind of a thing, coordinating schedules. And truck drivers also have a life. So I don't want to condition this, make this too onerous for the truck drivers.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Jess? Seeing none, I wanted to ask Mr. Hayashima if he would like to also address the commission since you were the co-applicant at our last hearing.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, nice to be here again. I'm actually very happy and pleased to be here. I'm pleased that my partner was able to really work through some pretty onerous issues with Rite Aid. And Commissioner O'Grady, I just want to assure you that we pushed them as hard as we possibly could to get what we got. And I think that the efforts that we placed were really good faith efforts. I would just suggest to Planning Commission that any significant changes or limitations that we place on Rite Aid further puts risk, because we pushed them, I believe, to a comfort zone that was very marginal as to having them approve this and move forward. So I'm very confident that there is very little to get out of Rite Aid, and that that decision by going back would once again risk this entire project for us. So My hope is that you'll support the project as stated without delivery conditions, et cetera.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the co-applicant? Commissioner Slane? No. Commissioner Jack? We have to have
just a comment. Thank you for the results and the effort that I'm sure it took to get through corporate. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'd like to open this up for public comment on this item. If anybody would like to speak on this item, please approach the podium now.
Good evening. My name is Len Colamarino, and I wanted to address this particular project. Although I have to say, planning, which I usually think of as a proactive process, a process that involves a certain perspective, a view of the forest and not just the trees, but by the piecemeal process that's been going on, we're now going to have three drive-throughs in a row right at the entrance to the town. There are implications for the city's image in that kind of an arrangement. There are also aesthetic implications, the picture of all these driveways running in and out, because I gather each drive-through has to have a driveway in and a driveway out. Of course, there are questions for the flow of traffic, which again, I assume you're attending to responsibly. But by this piecemeal process, we now have three drive-throughs in a row at the very gateway of our community. Also, we have one of the drive-throughs, the Carl's Jr., occupied by a tenant that'll be vacating another space. We have Rite Aid unsatisfied with its existing space, and so they're vacating, and now there's going to be infill needed. I guess the question that pops up from this distance that I'm at is anybody looking at the forest here? There's a lot of evidence suggesting that the forest hasn't really been looked at over the years, but we're due for a renovation in the business district of Atascadero. And I would urge the Planning Commission to be at the forefront of that renovation process. That's what planning is about, proactive behavior. Let's get some design standards. Let's have some policies about drive-throughs. Let's have policies about aesthetics. Let's have standards for each district of the commercial areas. We have a beautiful community here. But our commercial area is due for a renovation, and I think the Planning Commission should be taking the lead in that. So I ask you to please undertake that responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colomarino. We will address your questions when the public comment period closes.
Joanne Main, 8940 San Gabriel Road. And I do see a huge improvement with this project before you today compared to how it showed last time. I think the applicant has done an admirable job in achieving what you've all requested. And I want to remind maybe more to the comments of Mr. Colomarino that what we are gaining here is the shopping center is antiquated. It is broken up into different parcels. There are different owners for every section in that area. We're hoping that with what we're seeing, the redevelopment of the old Rite Aid, we will be getting rid of a vast parking lot that was doing nothing for anybody, with nothing of interest to look at, but maybe people having car sales and using the fence for any banner that they wanted to put up. I see the town, I see developers really working in a forward motion to clean up this area. I also see a lot of thought to their gas, buy their food, visit Rite Aid, visit the grocery stores, and then get back on the road. That's what we're all about, you know. We need to get our share of what's driving by every day, all those thousands and thousands of cars. So I see what before you tonight is a vast improvement for that corner, and I applaud you and hope that you will go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Main. Anybody else in the public like to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public comment period and bring it back to the commission. Mr. Colomarino had a couple of questions, which I will address towards the staff. First was regarding the piecemeal nature of development within that shopping plaza. Kelly?
Thank you. Development of the entire center has been a little bit difficult simply because there are individual owners, and like we plan a center today with a lot of shared parking and access easements, this center was not developed under those principles back in the 80s and previous to that when it was started. So there are a number of different owners throughout the center. You can kind of see that when they repave their parking lots. it becomes more noticeable where the lines sort of end and where they begin. So it is a center that deals with a lot of different owners and different applications not done in a more holistic manner. However, we have ensured with this development and development of the Loop and Go parcel that at least we try and retain those shared access areas, and no portions of the parking lot are really restricted or blocked off. So to the greatest degree that we could do that, we have tried to accommodate that.
Thank you, Kelly. Could you also address the development that's proposed for the existing Rite Aid building in terms of renovation and upgrade?
Sure. Part of this application, since it is a master plan of development, has to include architecture and redevelopment of the existing building on the site. So the applicant has proposed some new elevations with facades that are completely remodeled that include a lot of decorative features. They will be able to separate that building into smaller-sized tenant spaces and market it to a variety of different retail and other uses that are allowed within that zone. So we do expect for additional retail opportunities to come to the center after remodeling the rear building.
Thank you, Kelly. I think I'd like to take on the last question that you had, Mr. Colamarino. This was regarding the drive-through policy and the number of drive-throughs along El Camino Real. The commission has asked that the City Council give them some direction in terms of policy on drive-throughs, and this is such an important issue that many of us feel that it needs to go to a public hearing because there's varying opinions on drive-throughs, that some like them and some feel that they're very necessary, particularly for a pharmacy or for someone who's elderly and has trouble getting out of cars or someone with children in the car. So we have asked that the City Council address this drive-through issue at a later date, and they have assured us that they will. At the current time, drive-throughs are an allowable use, and the Commission needs to act within the guidelines that we currently have.
Madam Chair, if I could just make one more comment.
Yes, you may, of course.
The gentleman did make some good comments just about the character of the business district. Staff, the commission obviously understand that there's some shortcomings there. I just wanted to let the commission as well as the public know right now that the city right now is working on an update to the redevelopment plan. Most of the business district is in the redevelopment.
Frontage there, and doesn't an entitlement go with the property there for because each one had an entrance and exit on the El Camino side there.
Excuse me. To answer your question, I believe that you do have the authority to close that driveway, but I'd want to check with the city attorney to be absolutely sure because that they're coming before you for an entitlement. I think at this time you can look at that and discuss that in your purview. But I would, if you wanted to go that direction, I would defer to the city attorney to make absolutely sure that's correct. What I would like to do is give you some late-breaking news. I am the representative from the city with Caltrans on the 10141 interchange project, and based on discussion of this planning commission, the concerns about left-hand turn movements across El Camino Real, I've approached Caltrans to see if within their project we can't have a center median in El Camino Real between the signals at the northbound ramps and Morro Road. Caltrans has looked at the issue. They're weighing it very favorably, and it looks like at the end of the project we will be able to have a center median of some sorts. I don't know the width. I don't know if it would be landscaped, but I know that Caltrans is in favor of it, and our staff, planning staff, will start working with them to come with the design of that, and that will restrict any left-hand turn movements out of those driveways. So we're trying to do everything we can with the situation.
Thank you for that good news. Let's bring it back to the commission. Any other comments? Yes, Commissioner O'Grady.
Yes, I would like to add my 2 cents worth about Mr. Colamarino's comments. In my 15 months on the Planning Commission, I've come to understand that Planning Commission is a bit of a misnomer. We really do precious little planning. We do react to projects that are submitted to the commission by the development community, and we do the best we can to try to make them the best projects that they could possibly be for Atascadero. I realize that's perhaps not as much as you would like it to be, nor it's certainly not as much as I would like it to be either. I do think that some of the planning sessions like the one that Director Frace alluded to with respect to the Redevelopment Agency meeting on Thursday morning, that will allow some limited participation by planning commissioners in that. So there are a few opportunities like that for us to do a little bit of planning. With respect to policies on drive-through, we have a policy on drive-throughs. It's articulated in the general plan, and it says drive-throughs are subject to a conditional use permit. And the procedures for conditional use permits are spelled out in our zoning regulations. And they basically say that the Planning Commission has the responsibility to assess, evaluate, analyze on a case-by-case basis requests for drive-throughs and decide whether or not in its wisdom thinks that.
Let's bring this back for discussion and perhaps a motion. Commissioner Slane?
Well, I'd like to make a comment to that. I think we do have some planning within this community, and I think our planning staff does quite a bit by direction from the City Council. And without their efforts and their time and their planning and analyzing what's going on, we wouldn't have as great a project come forth to us to review and give comment on. And in all honesty, I'm very grateful for the Planning Commission. A couple weeks ago when Rite Aid came up here, they made some great comments and recommendations as far as the architect, and Rite Aid went right along with that and worked with us, and we planned through this thing to get a good project going. So I see more of the positive of what's going on in the city. So that's where I'm at on this thing.
Any other comments? In, Commissioner Jack?
In keeping with that, the positive nature of this, I'd like to move that we adopt staff's recommendation and adopt a resolution PC 2008-0018 certifying proposed mitigated negative declaration 2008-0003 and approve a master plan of development conditional use permit 2008-0223 for a new 17,340 square foot retail building with a drive-through pharmacy and remodel of an existing 21,500 square foot retail building at 7055 El Camino Real based on findings and subject to conditions of approval and mitigation monitoring.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Commissioner Jack and seconded by Commissioner O'Keefe.
Discussion.
Discussion. Commissioner Marks?
I'd like to add an additional condition, recommendation to the City Council. I, too, have reservations about drive-thrus. However, this project has attempted to follow APCD requirements in mitigating some of those impacts. One of those mitigation measures, although tiny, I think can say something about the city, and that is a sign in the drive-through section that asks people to shut their engines off. I think at this point I would like to see the City Council come up with some sort of a policy. This kind of sign, I think, should say more than simply turn your engine off. I'd like to see the sign say something about Atascadero, about us working as a team with other communities, working with the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement, as an explanation why folks ought to shut their engines off. I think this is important, and I think we need to take those first steps. You all got the questions. I sent questions, the copy of the questions to everyone.
You know, you're going to drive up, and they're going to do what they want anyway. You know, I think of the pregnant ladies with all these kids. They drive up in their car, and it's in the middle of summertime.
they're going to run their engines. They're going to do it. If it's going to be during the winter time, they're going to leave the heater on. It's only those people that want to comply with it are going to comply with it. I like the idea of the sign. I have no objections to it. I don't know how good it's going to do in the community for people. It's like carpooling. People should be carpooling to come to the meetings. Do you carpool? Do you pick up your neighbor, Pam? No, you come down here. Does Dan come down, pass my house, and ask if I want a ride? No, they don't think about it. People don't do that stuff. The sign would be nice, but I don't know if it's going to get any compliance out of it. So that's just a comment.
At least we'll have a sign. We can't. We're not going to have an enforcer. Okay.
Commissioner Hetherington.
Gosh, Commissioner Marks, I was going to trade off on solar panels to okay this project. I guess that was my comment. For the last meeting, that a drive-through would have to be offset by other major improvements for me to support it, and I can't get there yet. The gentleman who spoke about seeing the forest for the trees, I agree with you. I think having three drive-throughs here is cumulative impacts that I'm hoping the Air Pollution Control District presentation we'll get into later this evening. But I mean, having a sign is such a little thing to, you know, maybe give somebody a chance to turn off their engine. But I think a drive-through needs to be offset by much more, and I think that for me it would have been solar panels on the roof. So I'll end with that.
Commissioner Jack?
My concern here is adding signs, and that is another form of pollution. And how big a sign are you talking about, Doug? I mean, to get all that verbiage on. I mean, I can go with a sign that basically says, please turn off your engine. But beyond making it something that's going to become a very visible type of thing that everybody's going to see. In my way of thinking, it's just another form of pollution, which we're all in favor of reducing. So to mitigate one form of pollution with another form, it doesn't seem, I can't get there. Thank you.
Commissioner O'Grady.
You folks that weren't here last time probably don't understand the pressure that this commission was under to approve this project as submitted. There was pressure from the developer claiming that it would be next to impossible to get changes from Rite Aid. There was even pressure from Joanne Main at the chamber to accept the project as is. But this commission recognized that this project could be better and that Atascadero deserved better. And I'm very happy to say that, and I express confidence in safety and welfare of the general public or persons residing or working in the neighborhood of the use or detrimental or injurious to the property or improvements in the vicinity of the use. If it isn't right now, this corner will be the most will be the busiest intersection in our city. I mean, it's difficult to navigate San Anselmo, for example, by the Lube and Go and where the interstate exit or 101 exits, and there's gas stations. This will be worse. It is complicated by the fact of the 18-wheelers. And you noticed, well, it's not up on there now, but you noticed the wheel analysis of the trucks. The rear end of those trucks won't even be able to straighten out. And that's assuming that there are no cars waiting in the turn lanes. And that's highly unlikely. You have a deadly scissor pattern, people trying to get into that entrance off of 101. You have people coming out of Carl's Jr. You have people trying to get into that entrance off of El Camino from down the street. It's a matter of conscience for me. I think that is going to be one dangerous situation. And in addition, for delivery trucks to get back on 101, and go north, they're going to have to go through our downtown. That is highly undesirable. So as a forensic engineer, I can see that this is going to be a lawyer's paradise, and I would urge the developer and I would urge Rite Aid to think about the potential consequences of what can happen at this intersection. In March, I outlined a survey that I did of 12 cities and looked at the separations of the driveways onto arterial streets, and this doesn't come close to meeting those conditions. So, as I said at the outset, I really appreciate what you've done to respond to the concerns of the commission, and I just wish I could vote for this project, but I can't.
Any other comments? Seeing none, I think I'll put one in here. I would like to say that I truly appreciate the actions of the applicant in cooperating with the wishes of the commission. What we had last time, as I recall it, was a very plain vanilla box. And we had several options, a white box with a blue stripe, and the one that the applicant brought to us. We've seen some big improvements in terms of the roof definition. As you look at that, there's been some facing put on there. This building now fits in very well with the existing buildings that will be built and add some depth to that shopping center. What we were facing before was a 23-year lease for Rite Aid. They had no reasons to leave the site that they were currently in. The old Rite Aid building, as you know, is an old design. It is very plain, does not enhance the appearance of the city from our viewpoint as the gateway feature. What this building will do, even though it has its faults, even though it has some traffic problems. Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yeah. With regard to the request by Commissioner Marks to have some additional comments with idling the engine, if I seconded the motion, I would certainly be prepared to accept that as an additional condition if the maker of the motion would do it. I don't think it would hurt anything. People who want to tune it out would tune it out. But a few people might say, oh, hey, that's a good idea. So I'm asking
Thank
Commissioner
you, Commissioner
Jack.
I understand what you're saying, but it was my understanding that Commissioner Jack had declined that with his comments. If you'd like to clarify that as the maker of the motion, that would be appreciated.
If I could interject just quickly, I believe that a standard no idling sign condition has been added to the project. So that sign will be erected as part of this project. We just didn't specify the language, and we'll leave that up to City Council, I believe, if they want to add some Atascadero-specific language to that sign. I also just wanted to clarify and make sure that all of the recommended mitigation measure changes that staff had proposed were included in your motion for those couple correction items. So
thank you, Kelly.
Any clarification on that?
Yes, Commissioner Jack.
Kelly, what size is that the sign proposed to be?
It just says a no idling sign, so I imagine it would be fairly small in nature and simply say no idling or please shut off your engines.
Okay. Yeah, and that's already in the neg deck.
Correct. It was a mitigation measure from Air Pollution Control District that was added.
Right. Thank you.
I'd like to ask the maker of the motion and the person who seconded whether they would accept the changes that staff has put down, as mentioned by Kelly.
Which is this with she regard to the powdered?
Yes, some very minor modifications.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Call the question.
Where do we stand with the sign?
As I understand it, the sign will say no idling or something to that effect.
I understand that. So we're not going to send this to the council and ask them, the council, and ask them to add some wording to it, committing Atascadero. We're asking folks to work with us.
That is my understanding.
Okay.
Let's go ahead with the motion.
I have a motion by Commissioner Jack and a second by Commissioner O'Keefe.
Correct.
Do I get votes now from everyone
Please,
else?
Please, yes.
Okay. Commissioner Hetherington?
No.
Commissioner O'Grady?
No.
Commissioner Marks?
No.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
So that's two.
We have two that have not voted. O'Keefe and Jack.
Sorry. O'Keefe?
Yes.
And Jack?
Yes.
So that's 4-3. Motion passes.
Thank you, Annette. I'd like to take a 5-minute break. Let's return to our public hearing at 8:25. Okay. I'd like to call the meeting back to order. If you have comments, please hold them until after the hearing. Let's go to our next item, which is the Colony Square CUP. Staff report, please.
Our next item tonight is going to be an amendment to the Colony Square project to the tentative track map and the conditional use permit on the project. The project is located right here next to City Hall. It's in the downtown land use designation and the downtown commercial zoning district. To give you a little bit of background on the project, the master plan on development was originally approved in August of 2005, and the original tentative track map was approved in October of 2005. There are 9 parcels total included on the original map, and that includes the City Hall parcel, which was included with the map with a lot line adjustment. There are 2 parcels in the lot, which consist of 67 residential condo units, and the project has a total of 8 new buildings, which include retail and restaurant space, a 10-screen movie theater, office space, and residential units. The proposed map amendment that we're looking at tonight is proposed in order to adjust the lot lines to create separate lots over the roads and the parking areas. Currently, the lot lines basically go through the center of the roads throughout the project so that the roads and the parking areas are shared or actually located on the site where the building is located. What the applicant has proposed is to separate out the roads, as you see here below, in order to create separate parcels. We actually have 3 separate parcels here over these roads. With the amendment, we would be combining some of the lots. The movie theater lots there previously were 3 lots here where the movie theater was. Those would all be combined into one. These 2 buildings near City Hall were previously on separate lots, and they are now proposed to be on the same lot. So with both maps, we have 9 lots total, but in the amended map, we have separate lots over the roads. And this is being proposed for financing purposes. That's why the applicant has proposed this at this time. The maintenance over the roads would still be taken care of by all of the members, all of the lots as part of the track map, and that would be done with the road maintenance agreement that is finalized in the final map process. And just to reiterate, there are no changes that are being proposed far in the detail of the planning of those buildings. What they would like to do and what the staff has included in the new draft resolution is to require master CC&Rs with the final map, which includes the commercial sites and all of the common areas. Residential CC&Rs wouldn't be required until they come in for residential building permits. The off-site improvements also have some condition changes in there, and this relates to the improvement requirements that were required previously that are now going to be done by the redevelopment agency as part of their streetscape project. And these condition changes are proposed as both part of the tentative track map amendment and the CUP amendment. The CUP amendment is only being done in order to make it consistent with the map changes. These changes are still consistent with the certified mitigated negative declaration that was originally posted for the project. These are the findings for approval of a vesting tentative track map and a conditional use permit. And tonight, staff is recommending that the Planning Commission approve resolutions PC 2008-0022 and 2008-0023 in order to approve the Master Plan of Development Amendment and the Tentative Track Map Amendment as conditioned. And the applicant is here tonight if the Commission has any questions on the project.
Thank you, Callie. Commissioner O'Keefe? Can't hear you.
I keep turning it off. With regard to the off-site improvements, were these originally off-site improvements that the applicant was supposed to do? And if they were, what has been changed?
Some of the off-site improvements that we're looking at here would be the ones on El Camino Real. Those were originally conditioned as part of the project. And the redevelopment agency has planned a streetscape project where they'll be doing those improvements anyways.
But could you be more specific as to what they were?
It includes the, I believe it's the medians in the right-of-way, the sidewalks and street trees on both sides. So what we're proposing is that the city would be doing anything that's actually in the right-of-way. The applicant would be doing anything that's off-site. So there are some conditions in there for redoing the driveways and such as part of the development across the street. The applicant would still be required to do those because they're on-site improvements across the street.
Okay. And did the original project have a homeowners association, or is this new?
It was conditioned for a homeowners association, and we're going to defer that as part of the residential CCNRs and not require that until they come in for residential building permits.
Okay. And the transit stop, that hasn't changed, has it? Or is that the original, one of the original conditions?
That is one of the original conditions that has not been changed.
Okay. And then just as point of interest, who owns the city hall? Who owns the lot that this building is on?
The redevelopment agency.
It does.
Is the owner of city hall.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff?
I do.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Can they make it so that you can't get from one part of Colony Square to another?
No, the site access and all of the site improvements will remain as they were originally proposed. There will be access easements over all the roads so that the public can go throughout those roads, and also the public can get to City Hall. So those original conditions won't be changed.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes. This project is a great first step in creating a nice walkable community in downtown. I noticed in the conditions, and this is more of a historic question, that we're requiring an increase over Title 24 of 10% in energy efficiency. What is the reason for that?
I believe this was an original APCD mitigation measure that they requested as part of the project back in 2005 when it originally was adopted. So this was something that they requested and the applicant agreed to, and it was a condition as part of the project as a mitigation measure.
Okay, and we don't know why at this point.
Just for air quality, because it was a project that they could condition on as it was coming before Planning Commission. So APCD to ask for that as part of the environmental review.
Okay. That's interesting, because this is a great step in reducing air pollution by creating walkable and cycling areas. Okay, thank you.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Why are the driveways carved up into three lots instead of one?
I believe this is probably part of the financing of the project, but the project engineer is here, and he can probably explain that a little bit better. But I know that it's been very specific on how to finance each of these lots, so they've been trying to work out the underlying lot lines so that they can get that financing.
Is there anything that prevents these lots from being sold?
They could be sold, but it doesn't seem very likely that somebody would buy just a road. Right now, they're proposed to just be continue to be maintained or continue to be owned by Colony Square LLC. The maintenance won't change because that will be part of the road maintenance agreement. So even if they are sold, the road maintenance agreement is what covers the maintenance of these roads.
Accepting the three lots for the roads, there are what, nine other ones or?
There are three road lots and six other lots, and that includes City Hall's parcel.
And parking is included as part of the ownership of those other lots?
Parking is included as part of the road, and most of these you can see here on the map where it juts out for the parking in a lot of these areas. So it is included as the road, not on the individual building lots.
Okay. How does...
This will show that they all share in the maintenance and they all share the parking throughout the project. So this is a way to do it where we really have the consistency throughout the project.
Okay. I think I had another question or two. You spoke about the CCNRs, and I'm not quite sure I grasp all of that with the master CCNRs that applied, and then the commercial part, which is going to predate the residential, which isn't fully developed yet, but aren't some of these buildings going to be a mixed-use arrangement where there perhaps would be office or retail on the ground floor, and then on upper floors there would be residential? Could you comment on how that could work and be coordinated?
Yes, that's correct. The way that we usually do CCNRs is that we condition them with the final map. That's a pretty standard thing that we ask for. With a project this size, it's turned out that it's a very large task for them to complete these CCNRs. And right now, they have, I believe, just about completed the roads that are out there, and they are ready to start building the movie theater building over here in the corner. And we want CCNRs for those because we want to make sure that the trash and the landscape and all the common areas are being maintained. Right now, they don't have permits in for the residential buildings. They really don't know how those are going to be laid out as far as where the residences are, how they're going to be configured. So it seems premature to ask for CCNRs and the other housing requirements at this time. So we've split it up to require the master CCNRs, right now, and that'll cover the site itself, all of the shared areas. And then when they actually come in to do the residences, we'll require that prior to building permits.
Okay. On page 74, you speak about additional, quote, minor modifications that have been made to other project conditions for consistency and clarification. Could you go over what those are, please?
Most of these are really minor things that we changed, say, from being due at, sometimes we'll say it's due at final occupancy. Maybe we changed it to due at building permit issuance. Details like that that we changed just because we're farther along the project at this point. 3 years later, we know a little bit more about when realistically the timing of these conditions can be done and when we should be requiring them. So those are the type of minor things that we changed. That was about it. The CCNRs and the offsite improvements are the only actual condition changes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Commissioner O'Keefe.
My first question is for Steve Kahn, and that has to do with the pedestrian bridge. Originally, what proportion of that bridge was the applicant going to pay for?
The conditions of approval originally read that the applicant would share in the funding of the construction of that bridge, and there was no percentage that was allocated inside the original conditions of approval.
So is there funding? This question also, a comment was made that about property across the creek that the city will acquire or has acquired. What property is that, and what is it for?
The property that was discussed earlier is called Creek Reservation Number 3. It encompasses Atascadero Creek and Creekside Park all the way from El Camino Real to Lewis Avenue Bridge. Oh. We're in the middle of final negotiation, actually not even final negotiation, final paperwork with the city to for the city to acquire that property in fee from Atascadero Unified School District. And then the second part that we are in negotiations with, we're in a negotiation with the Atascadero Historical Society. They have a lease over that property, so we're looking at revising that lease to allow the pedestrian bridge to go in.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? I have a question for Callie regarding the road maintenance. Is that portion separate from the CCNRs?
It is. It's a separate document that's required when the final map records, and it specifically spells out what percentage each lot will be responsible for as far as the maintenance of the landscaping and the roads.
So assuming that this is phased and the theater goes in first and we see subsequent buildings along the way, how will they split up the cost of maintaining the roads in the interim?
It would be required with the original document. So even if the buildings aren't built, they will still be required to pay their percentage, and the person who owns the lot would be responsible for that.
Thank you. And Steve Kahn, I was wondering if you could refresh our memory regarding the closing of driveways across the street for Rabobank and for Denny's, and also the pedestrian crosswalk that's proposed.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. This driveway, it's hard to tell on the site plan on the screen, but the driveway is across the street from two driveways at Denny's and Rabobank. As a condition of approval, we've required the project to realign those two driveways into one so they line up straight across with the project and allow for safe vehicle movements in and out of driveways so the two movements don't conflict from the driveways across the street. That's the driveway condition. Second condition is that they provided design of a crosswalk across El Camino Real. So what we've done with the streetscape project, the applicant will be installing improvements on El Camino Real, curb gutter, sidewalk, and bulb outs. They've already installed those. They'll be installing curb gutter and bulb outs on the other side. The city of Atascadero will be installing the medians in the middle of El Camino Real. We'll also be resurfacing El Camino Real, installing the crosswalk, and installing an archway across El Camino Real near the project entrance that has the word Atascadero on. It's very attractive.
Thank you. And as I recall, they were going to combine the Rabobank and the Denny's driveway, so there was just one driveway rather than two. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Any other?
Good evening, Chairwoman Fonzie and Commissioners. My name is Robert Winsley. With the property lines running through the center of the roads, that homeowners association would have had some say in what happens within those road parcels. The reason that that's significant is twofold. First of all, when you go to construct a project like this, you purchase what's called a wrap insurance policy, which protects the design and the building team throughout the process of designing buildings and building those buildings. By taking the roads out of those parcels, we're able to build those roads, which are in fact built, without having to purchase that wrap policy, which is quite expensive up front, frankly. It's millions of dollars. And it subsequently makes it very difficult for the homeowners association to engage in lawsuits regarding the roads. Why is that important to the city? Because your sewer line runs through those roads. Your storm drain line runs through those roads. This project is riddled with public utilities that are already installed, realigned, and functioning properly now. Also, by separating the roads onto separate parcels, it facilitates the ability to create maintenance agreements that are discrete to specific parcels. So there are three parcels noted on this plan that are only roads and parking. That way, when we do the agreements, which are under review currently by the city staff and city attorney, we can say it applies to lot 6, 7, and 8, or whatever lots they are. It provides for a much easier legal description. Part of the reason that we changed the number of lots is because of the orientation of the building of a few of the buildings doesn't lend itself well to building code issues as far as fire code issues go and fireproofing the sides of buildings. The two small commercial buildings in the center of the project that used to be on two lots and are now on one lot are actually technically by fire code defined as one building. And therefore, without having the property line in the center of them, it allows them to build the buildings as a joint project and lets those buildings have less restrictive fire code restrictions. It's really a technical issue that has to do with where the lot line falls between the buildings. The minute we put a lot line between the buildings, we have separation issues. And that has ramifications to the appearance of the buildings. For instance, if you want exterior features that I think that you'd find architecturally pleasing, they might conflict with fire code restrictions if those were on two separate lots. Those are the kinds of reasons that we separated the lots into the configuration that they are now. In response to the question of why are there three road lots as opposed to one large road lot, Originally, we had developed easements relating to the public utilities that defined where those lots were going to be. It's not readily apparent by driving through the parking lot out there, but there are three 66-inch storm drain pipes that run through one of those road lots. There's a 15-inch sewer that runs through another one of those road lots. Feasible. Again, that's another reason why we need to get the residential lots and the residential CCNRs, very importantly, in their own standing separate from the rest of the project. We're not asking you at this time to change anything that has to do with the residential aspect of the project. In fact, we're not asking you to change anything that has to do with the appearance or function of the project. With regards to the public improvements on El Camino Real, originally when we brought this project before you, what was approved is that we would replace the curb and gutter on El Camino Real. We had a condition that we would work with Denny's and Rabobank across the street. We are working with them currently. That is not an easy negotiation. That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen quickly because Denny's doesn't own, the operator of the Denny's doesn't own that lot, so there are a lot of players that we're working with on that. And I believe that everyone in the spirit of helping the city is participating in that. Along those lines, during the plan development process, we were asked to add those bulb outs that are now constructed to the curb. That wasn't one of our original conditions. The owner did that at his cost. We were not ever conditioned to put the medians in the street, and we have designed the crosswalk. We have really tried to work with city staff, and I think city staff has tried to work with us on providing a solution out there. And part of that solution is that your staff is already preparing plans to put that median in, repave that street out there. And so some of the interim improvements you see out there now are an effort not to evade any sort of improvements that we would have to do, but rather not have to do things twice. We don't want to pave a street, rip it out, and put it back in again. In addition to that, The driveway function is not only a function of this project. If you remember, this project had two driveways in its, what I'll call its pre-development condition. There were two driveways on El Camino Real. We have reduced that to one driveway. That in and of itself is a safety concern. Not a concern, a mitigation. Neither of those previous driveways lined up with any other driveway on the street. Our new driveway lines up with the most prominent driveway, which is that of the Rabobank across the street. By making the changes that we've made, we are helping the city prepare those property owners for the median that the city wants to put down the street. Without the changes that we're trying to implement across the street, frankly, your public works department would have a situation on their hands where you would have the Denny's property not very excited about the median that was being put in, because you would have to be able to get into both Rabobank and the Denny's through that median without engaging them in some sort of mitigation for the lost traffic that would be happening there. So I just want to make it very clear that while staff is working with us, we're really working to try to help the city fix the traffic solution that's out there. And we have lined our lanes up with the proposed lanes on the Rabobank. We've also done the design of their bulb outs, and we've also designed the connection that would connect the Denny's and the Rabobank parking lot. To further compound that issue, you have to remember when we have a more attractive entrance to your building. The benefits that the redevelopment agency will realize when they sell this building at some point in time because of this project also cannot be ignored. The value of this building, the value to the city, is greatly enhanced by the project that we're proposing. All that being said, the project is roads right now. We're done with roads. We need to be able to get a building built. We need to be able to start, the owner needs to be able to start collecting rent on that building. Nobody wants to pay to drive on the parking lot. We need to be able to get the city lot squared away. Right now, your city trucks are parked on Jim Harrison's property. It's just the way it is. We need to get this map recorded. We need to get the lots established so that the maintenance agreements can be put in place, because this building, the redevelopment agency, is a player in this development, as is Cowgirl, and they're not part of the map. Another reason that we need to get the lot squared away. There was a question about the 10% bump by the APCD. That was a standard condition issued in 2005 because of the up-density of the project. While they came to the meeting and supported the nature of the park once concept of the project, it was a standard condition that was put on many projects at that period of time. Pardon me while I just make sure I'm hitting all the notes that I've made here. Oh, I had one more comment about, there was a question about how is this different than Vaughn's. The difference is that the Vaughn's development, the series of lots that are there, while they have ingress and egress agreements with each other, it's much more difficult to get them to play nicely together, because those may not be definite easements that are set in stone. Another purpose of the lots on this project is that those easements, those utility corridors, are set on dedicated lots that are not easements. They are fee property lots that there's no discussion over the ingress and egress, because the maintenance agreements are covered on all of those lots. So, in conclusion, I'd just like to stress that the reason that we're here is twofold. First of all, we need to get a final map recorded. We need to get a final map recorded because the bank says that we need to get a final map recorded. In order to fund this property, in order to get the building built, they want one lot that the city, or that the movie theater will be built on, so that they can provide a traditional loan on that one lot, much different than the way funding was 3 years ago when we got this project approved. That's the primary reason that we're here. A secondary reason that we're here is because there were conditions on the conditions of approval whose timing prevented us from being able to file that final map because those conditions were things that we couldn't meet until we got into the residential portion of the development. So by approving this tonight, you would be not...
With three lots than one, I guess you're looking at adjacencies. I don't know how you're going to be figuring that out to the satisfaction of all the parties that you're asking to pay. But and I agree with what you said about the utilities and the easements on the roads, but only to the point or to the extent that Mr. Harrison owns them all. And without a restriction on the sales of one or more of those lots, in the future, I could see where that could pose a problem to other lot owners. Could you assuage my concerns in any way on those points?
I may be able to, and Dr. Harrison is actually here, too, if he wishes to put some input in. I'll try to field the question, and we'll see whether or not I can help. Okay. Part of the concern when you're talking about anything that has to do with associations, and I'm not just talking about homeowners associations, I'm talking about commercial associations on a project like this, is that you want to, as an owner, for many reasons, for construction defect reasons, for liability purposes, you want to hold on to as much control of the project as you can for as long as you can so that you can make sure that the project stays in tune with the original ideas that you have over the development. By keeping the parking on the lots the way it is, Dr. Harrison has provided he and his partner a way of owning three of the lots within the development and therefore keeping a majority ownership along with the other buildings that they intend to keep so that they can have basically ultimate say in any changes or questions that happen with regards to the future development. Yes, the lots could be sold individually. Why anyone would want to buy a road lot, a lot with that's so encumbered by city utilities, I have no idea why anyone would want to do that other than the city. The city is the only other person that I can think of that would want to own these lots because of all of the utilities that run through them. And there are some major utilities. And I should point out, too, that there were some real issues with the utilities out there. We had a sewer sump situation that the city used to have to swab a sewer out there regularly. It's not a problem anymore. So I think that the lots being under separate ownership is merely a function of keeping control over the development, providing for the maintenance agreements, and even if they did sell them to someone else, they would still, if they wanted to do anything different with those lots than what they're approved for, if you approve this project tonight, they'd still have to come back in front of you to make a change to that lot. And the maintenance agreement follows the maintenance use, ingress, egress, utility, easements, all of those things follow the ownership through the lots.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
My question is going to show a certain amount of ignorance, but that's where you learn.
That they can make some money. Certainly they would like to make some money off of this development, but you don't do brick pavers and make money. You don't, frankly, give into the concessions that they did 3 years ago to the Planning Commission at that time and make a lot of money. You don't develop a walk-friendly project and make money. The way you make money is by building, frankly, drive-thrus and parking lots. That's how you make money. You get people to your project, you sell them goods, you get them away. That being said, this project... These owners have an interest in the welfare of this city and of this project in particular. And I don't believe that there is any intent for them to keep the Dr. Harrison's getting up now, to keep this, to pass this project on to be somebody else's responsibility to take care of those roads. Who they fall to in the future, that's anybody's.
Well, I'm just thinking to the future because this is a big project that's going to be around for some time. So I'm trying to understand, you know, what it's going to be like 40 years from now. That's all.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, there's obviously a tax liability to those lots. Anytime you own a lot, there's a property tax liability. There's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't want to own those lots. What will probably happen is if they are not at some point purchased by parts of the development or by the city, they would then be transferred by Dr. Harrison via an estate, a will, a sale of the project as a whole. However it happens, they'd be transferred to somebody else. Regardless of who owns them, they have to come back here to make changes to the lots. They have to come to the Planning Commission. They have to provide the ingress and egress that they're establishing right now to the proposed lots. And the maintenance and ingress-egress agreements are in place, and they're not temporary. They follow the life of the project. Could someone come along and buy these 9 lots in the future and do a completely different development? Absolutely. Could they ever buy those lots and put barricades up so that you couldn't drive through? Could they let the asphalt fall apart? No, they couldn't. There could be a commercial association that ends up owning these lots, which is something that I know that Dr. Harrison and his partner have talked about, is the association owning the lots. The same association that's responsible for making sure the trash gets picked up and the lights turn on and the buildings get painted.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner O'Grady.
Well, this project is going to be phased, and so as far as contributions to maintenance of the different sections, the 3 lots on the roads, that's going to be different. And so there will be more wear and tear on portions of the road, perhaps, that are adjacent to developed lots, and perhaps less on the others, but some, because it goes, the road will go through the property. So, and then depending upon how these different lots are sold, somewhat analogous to the situation of the Vaughn Center, if the owner of Lot 7, say, wants to make some changes but doesn't own 6 or 5, that might make it more difficult if those are under separate ownership.
Cowgirl is not part of the map. Their lot, interestingly enough, has never included parking or driveways on it. It's always just been the small corner lot with the building on it, and we've proposed to maintain it that way because it fits in with what we're proposing on the rest of the development. With regards to the phasing of a project, when buildings will be built, different uses, wear and tear on the property, we discussed all of these things at great length with both our attorneys and city staff, and the most fair solution that we could come up with and what's currently in the documents being reviewed by the city attorney is a very simple pro rata share of maintenance based on commercial square footage on each parcel. And so for perpetuity of the project, if, for instance, and I'm just going to pick a number out of the air, the city's portion was 15% of that development, of that cost, it's always 15%. If the lot's vacant, it's still 15%.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Winslow. Dr. Harrison, did you wish to speak tonight?
Jim Harrison. I live in Pismo Beach at 143 Beachcomber. Trying to address the questions that you have about the ownership and so on. As Bob has mentioned, the project has a lot of upfront cost, and traditionally these types of developments, if you read a lot of articles that are available on the web with mixed-use development, they tend to cost anywhere from 15 to 35% more than just a regular development, as Bob mentioned, a building, maybe a parking lot adjacent, and so on. And the reason is that you use a lot of land and you put a lot of effort into creating walkways and so on. The walkways throughout the project are from about 15 feet up to 25 feet wide, which allows outside seating and all sorts of other things to occur out there. The idea that we would sell the lots off, that is, those 3 lots that are designated as parking, as Bob said, really doesn't make too much sense because we wouldn't really have a ready buyer for it anyway. the way that we're going to hopefully make some money on the project, in my opinion and the opinion of my partner, is to hold on to the retail spaces as rental units for some period of time. And through the appreciation and increased rentals over the years, you then recoup your investment. They talk about patient capital for these type of projects. My partner in particular is very much interested in patient capital. He's a gentleman that has done a lot of other investing, and that's his modus of operandi, more or less. I'm not very sure I want to do another development project, and I think what I want to do is to have an income at some point. And so we have come to a decision, and this is a decision that's been come to quite a long time ago, that we were going to retain that. The reason we went to these type of lots, as Bob has already mentioned, is that both for the wrap policies for the residential, if you improve part of the lot on which the residential occurs, you trigger that wrap policy, and we wanted to get away from that. So it was advised by the attorneys, and it made sense that you push those the lots back to what they call the back of curb so that you don't do any construction. Those three lots will participate in the agreed upon maintenance agreement. The other lots that are not built upon yet that are still in our ownership would have to have our participation on that. It doesn't become weighted differently to any of the lots. And then I guess the last question that Bob addressed, that when we depart, there's always a mechanism. I mean, there's many properties around the world that are owned for many generations, and that's what happens. And the idea is that, again, continuing to own those retail spaces in conjunction with those lots will be the method of repayment, so to speak.
Any questions for Dr. Harrison? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to open it to the public. If you'd like to speak, please approach the podium now.
Good evening. Steve Martin. I'm the executive director of the Atascadero Main Street Program, and as you know, Colony Square anchors the southern end of our Main Street district. And there's been great anticipation of this project coming forward. I don't think a week goes by when I don't have somebody come up to me and say, so what's the progress of Colony Square? And so there's a great deal of interest in this in the community and indeed outside of the community to see this come online. The information I've heard presented tonight seems to boil down to me to say that the requests that are being made would, number one, simplify your lot configuration, which will make life easier for everyone, I think. That will provide a clarification of responsibility on who maintains those lots, specifically the road lots that would be created. Also, it preserves the conditions that have been attached to this project since the beginning, which is good news. And I think the issue of delaying the CCNRs for the residential construction until the end gives both sides flexibility to address what form and shape that residential construction may wind up being, rather than trying to set the rules in advance and then maybe having to undo that somewhere down the line. So all of that being said, it all supports what I'm sure we are all in favor of, and that is facilitating this project and making sure that it comes to completion as soon as possible. So we're in favor of it.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak tonight? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment period and bring it back to the commission for a motion or discussion. Commissioner O'Grady.
Just a brief discussion. On page 76, there's a proposed amended public improvement conditions to be added. I'd like to suggest beefing up the language slightly on number 27. It says the applicant shall cooperate. I'd like to put a comma there, scratch the word and, then provide, comma, and not restrict any needed access to his property in regard to all public improvements, and then add two words, and maintenance, that may need to be installed by the city fronting or adjacent to his property. I just think that will give the city a little bit more ability to do what it needs to do at any time.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
I'd like to hear from Steve Kahn, his comments regarding observations regarding that change.
Do you have any concerns over the change in language? I'm going to open this back to the public and for the applicant to speak.
I think that we have no objection to those changes. We have no intention of preventing access to the project for any of the improvements or the maintenance of those improvements.
Thank you for your cooperation.
Thank you, Mr. Winslow. I'm closing the public comment period again and bringing it back for any other discussion. Commissioner Marks.
this project is first. It's the first real shot that the city has at a pedestrian scale, walkable development. I think it's got a bright future. I like this project, and I think these changes are warranted. There was a comment made earlier tonight that drive-throughs are what Atascadero is all about, and this, I think, will prove that that's not true. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other commissioners with comments? Do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion. I recommend that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution PC 2008-0022 approving an amendment to vesting tentative tract map 2005-0071 based on findings and subject to conditions of approval and mitigation monitoring, and adopt Resolution PC 2008-0023 approving an amendment to Conditional Use Permit 2004-0127 Master Plan of Development Condition Amendment based on findings and subject to conditions of approval and mitigation monitoring, and the changes that were suggested by Commissioner O'Grady with regard to number 27. And did staff have any other additional ones that they had added? Okay.
I'll second that. Good job, Joan.
I don't know who seconded it.
I'll second it then.
Unanimous. Okay, let's take Commissioner Hetherington since she jumped in at a propitious time. So it's been moved by Commissioner O'Keefe and seconded by Commissioner Hetherington. Discussion? Seeing none, a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yes.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you, Annette. That closes the public hearing portion of our meeting. We now go to commissioner comments and reports and a brief presentation by the Air Pollution Control District Board. Staff? Excuse me. Oh, Pam, excuse me.
I'm glad to see Andy from the APCD here tonight. Last night I had a health commission meeting, and part of what the health officer brought to our attention was an incidence of valley fever up in North County, where they found that half of the staff working on the construction site had been exposed to valley fever and had come down with valley fever. And I think in looking at some of the projects,
their effects and impacts on air quality. So with us tonight, we have Andy Mutziger from the APCD, and he's going to provide a brief presentation, and we'll be available for any questions from the Planning Commission.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Good evening, commissioners. I'm Andy Mutziger with the Air Pollution Control District. The Air Pollution Control District appreciates tonight's lively discussion on drive-thrus and also of passing the Colony Squares. We also appreciate Commissioner Marks' Rite Aid suggestion that the global climate change educational component be added to the no idling sign. Global climate change education is a good tool to affect incremental change that is needed. Next slide, please. So before I get into drive-through discussions, I'd like to give you a little bit of background on air quality and development. Development has historically been automobile-focused. That has caused some issues. Mobile sources are the result in about half of the air pollution in our county. And there are two concerns that we're looking at. There is the traditional concerns of ozone precursors such as NOx and ROG that's nitrogen oxides and reactive organic gases, as well as particulate matter. More recent concerns are with global climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. So the Air Pollution Control District has thresholds for ozone precursors and particulate matter. And when those thresholds are exceeded, we identify mitigation. And for example, the Colony Squares, there was a 10% above Title 24. That it was a measure as a result of that project exceeding some of the air quality thresholds that their Air Pollution Control District sets. With regards to greenhouse gases, the state as well as the Air Pollution Control Districts have not defined a greenhouse gas threshold. That said, the Attorney General of the state is now asking for greenhouse gas impact evaluation as well as feasible mitigation. Next slide, please. Okay, so in general, for ozone precursors, modeling demonstrates, and we're talking here about drive-throughs versus non-drive-throughs. So it does demonstrate that drive-through impacts for ozone precursors are somewhat less than for non-drive-throughs. And some of the reasons for that is that the vehicle's technologies have improved, idling emissions have reduced, so there's just not a lot of, we can't really look at drive-throughs versus non-drive-throughs and say ozone precursors say that drive-throughs are a bad thing.
Excuse me, sir, could you clarify that? Are you saying that there is no difference in the air pollution from a drive-through facility and a parking facility?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying for ozone precursors specifically, there's not a lot of difference. And if we go to the next slide, I have a slide that shows, it should show, but it doesn't show. The graph there would show, so the next slide, I don't know if this will show or not. Apparently it doesn't, but your handout does show a substantial increase in greenhouse gas emissions with idling as opposed to parking. So with regards to the Rite Aid project and the drive-throughs, the operational phase modeling demonstrated that ozone precursors thresholds were exceeded. We identified mitigation for that. We also, there was no threshold that we have defined for greenhouse gases, but we have also identified mitigation. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide.
Excuse me, could you explain what you mean that you have not identified, there's no threshold?
Yeah,
I mean, how do you make this work if you don't know what the threshold is?
It's a good question. Right now, the state is in the process of developing that. I'll talk about that in a little bit here under the policies. But bottom line is that the state has identified that greenhouse gases are a substantial issue that they want to address. The next step for them is to define a threshold of significance for which mitigation is necessary. Before that takes place, though, the Attorney General has defined that it is an issue. Please identify the impact and go ahead and start putting together feasible mitigation. That's where we are in the timeline right now. Does that make sense?
So you are asking for mitigation for greenhouse gases, even though you don't know what the threshold is.
That's correct, and that is we're following the requirements or the suggestions by the Attorney General. He has brought suit to cities on their general plan amendments when they did not include greenhouse gas impact analysis and mitigation. He's brought suits against ConocoPhillips and several other entities. So in order for us to make sure we don't receive some of those suits in San Luis Obispo County, we are looking at trying to define mitigation, identify what the impacts are, and define mitigation. Okay. Okay, so let's talk about drive-thrus and the site environment. Drive-thrus, just by their very nature, they increase traffic, vehicular traffic. And this is a result, and the result of this is increase in fuel consumption. They also provide challenges for pedestrians and bicyclists to access facilities. Without safe access, these individuals will rely on cars instead of those alternative transportations. Now, I did want to mention that walkable communities can become more economically advantageous to developers by general plans offering density bonuses to compact urban development projects. Okay, so the next slide. Also improving transit amenities. Implementing things like green building techniques. Solar systems are good. Energy efficiencies. For global climate change, we are looking at increasing the efficiency to 20%. That's 10% above what we had been identifying for ozone precursor impacts. Okay, next slide, please. So I want to talk a little bit about the ozone and greenhouse gas policies. We have the county's Clean Air Plan, the Board of Supervisors, as well as Atascadero's general plan. They've adopted smart growth principles. Those are compact, human-scale urban development, infill, mixed-use, high-density. This is transit-focused, walking, bicycling, and it also provides better job-housing balance. We can live and work and play in the same location. So this kind of development it minimizes both ozone precursors and greenhouse gas impacts by reducing vehicle dependency. Okay, the next slide, please. Another policy here is the state has identified in 2006 AB 2032, which is California's Global Solutions Act. And this is the goal here is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the state to 1990 levels by 2020. California, as I mentioned earlier, is developing guidance on that, and that's due in 2009. But in the meantime, we are relying on efforts by the Attorney General, and we are implementing and asking for feasible mitigation for projects to address greenhouse gas impacts. Okay, in the next slide, we'll talk a little bit about Atascadero's policies. Again, I mentioned earlier that the general plan from 2005, Atascadero's general plan, does have adoptions of smart growth principles and focusing on, one of the focuses is compact urban redevelopment of the downtown. The Colony Squares project is a good example of this very thing, as well as an example of what was agreed to by Atascadero when they joined the mayor's climate protection agreement. The goals there are spelled out. They wanted to adopt and enforce land use policies that reduce sprawl, preserve open space, and create compact, walkable urban communities. These promote transportation options such as bicycling and walking and trip reduction programs. Okay, and then finally here, the next slide is where are things going in the next for greenhouse gases? California will formalize their approach to achieve AB 32's goals. Here in Atascadero, the bottom line is that reducing fossil fuel consumption is what's needed to help the state meet AB 32's goals. Vehicle dependent design is contrary to those goals. Does anybody have questions?
Commissioner O'Keefe.
you recommend that if somebody is in a drive-through that they turn their engine off. But has APCD done any studies to show the effect of constantly turning your engine off and starting it up with regard to the how this affects the functioning of the engine? Because my understanding is turning your engine off and starting it up, you may reduce pollution, but eventually your car doesn't run as efficiently, and that creates pollution.
We haven't specifically looked at that issue. We do recognize that the models demonstrate that when you turn off the engine, you have less greenhouse gas impacts. And you also have
But if your car isn't running as efficiently, then you create another problem.
That's correct. It's a good question. It is one thing that we do focus on with a lot of our construction phase mitigation is to ensure that people maintain their construction equipment as tuned as they're supposed to with regards to the engine manufacturer's recommendations. People have to take it upon themselves as well to do the same thing with their vehicles.
Commissioner
Could I just
Grady?
Add to that? I believe studies have been done by organizations such as United Parcel Service and FedEx. They now require the engines to be turned off when the driver exits the vehicle, and they have done analyses of the type that you're asking about and found that it's a net positive as far as air pollution is concerned.
I think to expand on that as well, vehicle technology has improved significantly. The emission control devices are computer controlled, and I think those are the reasons for the results that Commissioner O'Grady has spoken to.
Any other questions? Commissioner Marks?
How many other cities in this county have signed on to the mayor's climate agreement?
I think that there have been two or three others that have signed on. I'm not quite in that loop. I'm working more on grants than I am with climate change side. We have three other staff that are working pretty heavily on that. But my understanding is that some of the other cities, I don't have the names. I wish I did. But
okay. Thank you.
We can get those for you if you like.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Thanks for coming tonight, Andy, and waiting
sure.
through the long items that we discussed. Could you touch a little bit upon the ozone precursor as opposed to the greenhouse gas emissions, lest somebody just hangs on to the ozone precursor and think that it's okay? What about cumulative impacts? I know CEQA requires a knowledge of how many drive-throughs might impact the air quality differently. And we have three in one specific area. Does the Air Pollution Control District consider cumulative impacts?
Cumulative impacts are addressed in environmental impact reports, not so much with NEGDEX. That the tool isn't really there. That said, we are working with. I'll give you an example. In the county, we're working right now with a lot of mines that are being proposed in the North County. There are five mines that are being proposed. We have identified. When we look at these projects, we look at projects on an individual basis. The county, however, has asked that we look at cumulative impacts for those five mines. And that's something a little outside of the norm because these were all being done through the negative declaration process.
One final question. Will the Air Pollution Control District, once these projects are up and running, come back and measure the air pollution in the community at that intersection?
We do have monitors that we have, I think, eight or nine sites that are continuously monitoring air pollution in the county. One is here in Atascadero. occasionally we have requests to do site-specific monitoring, and it is very highly labor-intensive for us to do something to that effect. And there has to be some pretty big drivers for us to do those kind of extra evaluations. I think our goal, though, would be to continue to do our normal 24-hour-a-day, 365 days a year monitoring and look at those trends that we have from those continuous monitors. And with the policies that we have within the Clean Air Plan, with general plan amendments being changed to bring more compact urban development, cleaner fuels, cleaner vehicles, more transit-oriented designs. Those are the kinds of things that we can see trending, the trends of our air pollution in our county decreasing.
Any other questions? I have a couple for you.
Okay.
One is regarding this inventory for greenhouse gases. What do you mean by that?
There is a model called the ICLEI model, and we have staff that is they're getting trained on how to use these models. These models are used for identifying total consumption of energy by cities. So that's one of the tools that we have to help the cities identify their inventory of what is currently their energy usage, lighting, those kind of usage. On the mobile source side, we're working through policy changes and vehicle improvements. The state is the leader in that department, CAFE standards. So I don't believe the mobile sources are a component within the greenhouse gas evaluation, although it is possible that we could look at the fleets that the cities own and look at the mileage that are driven on an annual basis and identify the greenhouse gas impacts for those vehicles. So I'm not sure if that's part of the model. Again, that's something that some of our other staff are working pretty heavily with.
Okay. It seems rather hard to mitigate something when you don't know how much of it you have.
That's
kind of where I'm coming from. I'm trying to understand. In concept, I understand you, but I don't see specifically numerically how you do it.
Well, I know that one of the tools that can be used is working with the utility commission or the utilities in the area, and they have, Southern California Gas is that's the provider here, I believe, has said that they will work with us to identify, natural gas usage for cities. So that's a baseline that you can use, and they have many years of data for that. So that's one tool that we can use for, identifying total energy consumption from the city.
I see. I've been on the Planning Commission several years, and in the past we received different information from APCD regarding idling in drive-thrus. And as I recall, the statement was that if you idled less than 2 minutes, and this may have changed, it was better to idle than to turn it off and then turn your car on. You would actually use more gas. Is that true?
The data that we presented today is new data sets. It's something that we've actually worked with Santa Barbara on. The Santa Barbara Air Pollution Control District has been working with drive-thrus for a number of years. So they're a little ahead of our understanding of where things are for emissions on drive-thrus. So the information that we had provided in the past was historic information. It was the best information we had at the time. We are now looking at better information.
Okay, one last question. I know there have been people that have come to me and stated they don't understand the concern about drive-thrus for Atascadero in particular, because we have a freeway that goes right through the middle of town that is very close to the location of these drive-thrus, and there's obviously emissions from those cars that overwhelm the emissions from the drive-thrus. Could you address that, please?
Yeah, I think what we're really focusing in on is looking at a change in the paradigm from car-friendly environments to more walkable, human-scale environments. And it's a slow process that will take the state's looking for reductions by 20.
Two major contributors to air pollution are agricultural impacts and construction. Here in Atascadero, how does construction activity affect the quality of air? And what about agriculture? Not so much in Atascadero, but in North County or the county all over.
Yeah, let's first take a look at construction equipment. One of the problems is when you're working with redevelopment, that means that the construction is going to take place in the downtown urban core. So with that, there are, construction impacts are temporary. That's one thing that we say or we recognize. And one of the results of that temporary nature is the thresholds of exceedance we have for construction phases are much higher than they are for operational phases. So that's one side of it. But when we are looking at construction in the downtown urban area, we do have to look at the fact that there are things like sensitive receptors. Some of the sensitive receptors are schools in close proximity, hospitals, residences. So we do look at construction impacts, and we identify mitigation to address those impacts in a little more stringent fashion when it is urban construction that's taking place. Some of the things that we look at, construction equipment one of the things that has happened is construction equipment has just recently been regulated by the state. That was adopted last year. So a process is going to be taking place where old engines and these construction equipment, which had really bad diesel impacts. And diesel, to let you know, is a toxic air contaminant that the state identified in 98, and that's why these regulations are taking place. So construction equipment, we identify mitigation a little more stringently in urban areas than we do outside in remote areas, because those impacts are there.
Okay, and just generally speaking, what about impacts of agriculture on air quality in San Luis Obispo County?
Yeah. Again, one of the things that has just recently happened is that the agricultural community has freshly been regulated by the state. So one of the things that we're working on real heavily is to implement some of the requirements of those regulations. One is that stationary agricultural engines have to be registered with the Air District now, and we have registered 260 engines. What that does is there is a timetable for these engines to be cleaned up. So we know where they are, and we have a permit with each of these engines or registration with each of these engines, and when the deadline comes that engine needs to be cleaned up, we make sure that happens. So that's one of the things that's happening for ag engines, or for the agricultural community. Another thing that we're working on is on in the Cuyama Valley. That is one of the areas that we did some special studies as a result of dust impacts from agricultural activities out there by the nearby school. With that, we identified, we created a master or a memorandum of understanding between some of the growers out there to address and minimize the particulate matter emissions that came from those agricultural practices. So those are some of the things that are happening locally with the air district to help reduce the impacts from agriculture.
Okay. Well, we'll try to make sure we get it on all of them.
Thank you. I know.
They don't call her Hawkeye Fonzie for nothing.
Which one did they miss it on?
I don't recall. I'd have to go back and look, but I did not find it on one.
Well, but there were two reports, okay. And Kelly's is on her report.
Well, maybe I just didn't see it. Okay. It's a minor issue. Okay, very good. Is there any director's comments tonight?
Just a couple quick ones. I already mentioned, but I'll mention again, there's that RDA forum. We'll be looking at updating the redevelopment plan. It's this Thursday at 7:30 in the morning.
But we've been cautioned only three of us can come.
That's correct. It's not a Brown Act meeting. So if more than three of you, well, we have to limit it to three. So if you're interested in coming.
It's already been determined.
Okay. You guys already worked that out with Marcia?
Yeah.
Yes.
Enough said. Okay. Your next thing is a housing study session is coming up at the end of the month. We have a fifth Tuesday this week, so on April 29th, which is a Tuesday, at 6 o'clock here in the council chambers, we're going to have a joint study session with the city council. It'll be regarding our redevelopment agency affordable housing strategy. So that'll be a study session. We'll be looking for input from both the commission and council as we start to get toward developing some policies for how we're going to spend our housing set-aside funds. And I think that'll conclude my report.
Okay, and I understand that Steve Kahn will be making a presentation at the next council meeting regarding changes in regional water quality control board requirements. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, right now the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is a state agency that has jurisdiction, the board that we're in the middle of has jurisdiction from basically Santa Barbara to Santa Cruz. They are in the process of updating two of their plans. One's the basin plan. The basin plan, and we've talked about this with the commission before, one of its main functions is to deal with on-site septic systems, wastewater systems. And the basin plan sets a number of criteria for the construction and operation and maintenance of septic systems. So they're in the process of an update that will result in new regulations that will affect how and where you can install septic systems and even how the maintenance of existing ones is handled. So that's going on right now. Public Works, Dave Athey, is the lead for staff on working with the board on what those, on, I guess, reviewing comments and providing comments back from the city. The other thing that's going on at the same time is we have this process called NPDES-2, which is the National Pollution Elimination Discharge Standards. That's part of the Clean Water Act. It deals with all cities having to deal mainly with their stormwaters, any stormwaters or wastewaters that are released that aren't, you know, basically sewer waters. The board is trying to accelerate that process. They've adopted some new regulations in terms of how these local plans are going to be written. So we're coordinating with the board on that process right now, but that will be additional rules and regulations that will affect development, because most development ends up creating stormwater runoff, and it will significantly change and already is changing the way development is going to be done in terms of how you deal with stormwater, how much you can release, that sort of thing. So we're in the process of working with the board on that issue simultaneously. So there's two new sets of regulations that are in process, and Public Works is taking the lead on coordinating both of those.
Thank you, Warren. Seeing no other comments, meeting adjourned.